Let me tell you about something new.
It's time.
A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Friday, and welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thank you so much for being with us today. We've gotten through another, I guess you could say, turbulent and trying week, but, you know, we've gotten through it together, praise the Lord, and hopefully we'll continue to do that together. Our subject, of course, is the first Friday, and we're talking the economy and trying to find our way through that. And we have to help us Paul Z. Shelton from Warwick Shore. Good morning, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. So, geez, jobs, unemployment benefits, geez, what else can we talk about? Tourism down, opening back up the economy. I'll let you take the lead in terms of where to start, Paul, because I know your hands are full.
Yeah, so, you know, there are so many headlines coming out, so much news, so many data points that are being released, so much about the economy and everything that's going on in the world right now. But the most recent and the thing that's really been driving the market this morning has been the unemployment rate. Now, we've seen something happen today that we have never seen. We're seeing a lot of firsts this year. We saw some firsts in the initial drops, the largest drop of unemployment in a single month, in a single week. That was the first thing that happened back in April, our first time ever in our history we saw that. And then now we're seeing the complete opposite, the largest spike in employment ever, which is driving the market today. So approximately a little over 2.5 million people went back to work, or I should say 2.5 million jobs were added in the month of May. There were additional jobs that were lost across different sectors, but overall the employment situation improved by 2.5 million jobs in the month of May. And that dropped the unemployment rate from 14.7% down to 13.3%. Now, this is completely opposite of what everyone in the globe expected. And it's based on all the data that's released on a weekly basis. They were expecting we would see somewhere around 8 million to 8.3 million jobs lost in the month of May. And we were expecting to see an unemployment rate to rise to approximately 19.5%, just under the 20% mark in this country. But we've seen the complete opposite happen. The data is still being sifted through as of right now, but it looks like everything is moving in a positive direction for the U.S. economy, and that we're reopening and getting back to work, which is one of the things that we expected as we transitioned from the coronavirus shutdown to phase one, phase two, and then phase three of the reopening process. You would expect to see a rise in employment and sort of say a decrease in the unemployment. So this is something that we're expecting. We just didn't expect it to happen so soon. It was expected to see this rise take place this month, in the month of June, thus reflected in the July data. But it looks like the rise initially started more than likely in the latter part of April and really picked up steam in the early middle parts of May. So this data that's out there now, it doesn't truly reflect the fullness of the economy, which means that the picture could be a little brighter than it shows, even the 2.5 million. There are many areas of the country and many large cities in our country that are still either on phase one or in the early parts of phase one, initiating the opening of their economy. So this really just, you know, plays into the factor of many of the rural areas around the country and many of those pockets in America when you subtract out the overall larger municipalities and major cities within our economy. So overall, this is a very, very good number to end the week on and start the month of June and the second half of this investment year on. I know there's a lot in there, so if any questions you have, you go ahead and fire them in.
Okay, question number one. Do you know what industries we had this rebound in?
So initially it looked like most of the rebound was in the construction services industry, but it looks like the service industry itself, which is a lot of retails, restaurants, and things of that nature, have seen the largest increase in jobs thus far in the month of May, which is a good thing. So as many of those people are getting back to work that were laid off abruptly and immediately when everything shut down, you know, all of a sudden, overnight, everything was closed. So it seems like that's this sector right now, the economy, that's leading the charge and re-employing people and bringing people back.
Okay, so, and correct me if I'm wrong, I thought I heard something about we're here, like our tourism industry or whatever, our hospitality industry tanked like, what, 97% or something like that. That's a long, that's a deep ditch to climb out of, I would think. And I know some things are started, like they reopen Universal next month. Disney World here in Central Florida is scheduled to reopen. But there are a lot of people that are sitting on the sidelines, and some of those people, I was going to say, may have moved on, but I don't know where they would have gone. But how do you have any ideas in terms of the tourism industry and the timeline that might take to get back on track?
Well, there are some things in place that the government on a federal level is trying to do to spur the tourism industry, and that would be helpful definitely for our local economy here. One of those things is offering an incentive through sort of a stimulus plan for those that are going to travel over the summer period. And this is something that is still a proposal, and it's very new and young, I should say, in Congress. But there is a thought out there that if they could offer a stimulus for those that are willing to travel to the tourist zones and to spur economic activity there, there would be some sort of financial assistance given to those families that are thinking about going to the theme parks, going to hotels and things of that nature, just to increase travel. That is still a long ways from being signed into law. If anything were to come of that, we still don't know. It's just an idea to get our economy back up locally here, because we're so heavily predicated on the service industry and the theme parks. It's going to take some time. The supply of employment is here locally, but the demand for those goods, such as the theme parks, is not the major breadwinner for Disney, for Universal, for SeaWorld, and all the theme parks in our area. We really heavily predicate our demand for the theme parks is really heavily predicated on international travel and mm-hmm. domestic travel outside of the state of Florida. So it's going to take, you know, some time for the country to get comfortable with traveling again, knowing that the virus is still out there. And even though we saw a rise in the employment figures today, that doesn't negate the fact that we still have a really, really large amount of people that are unemployed. So
right.
The people that are typically going to travel or that could be looking to travel, they may be a little cautious to do so still, to spend on those leisure items just for the uncertainty of future income.
And then I know, for example, and I'm not going to name names, but you know, my husband's job, I know that apparently there were quite a few people that were laid off at his job. He was lucky enough to keep his, but and the company that he's a part of has other locations where even more people were laid off. But the bad part about it is they even have less business than – it seems like they have less business than people still. And that's going to be an issue, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. There is that demand aspect out there that is very low, especially as consumer appetites are changing. Over the last couple months through this pandemic, we've got a chance to see what it's like to visit a doctor's office virtually. We've got a chance to see what it's like to work virtually and just see our coworkers through Zoom as opposed to meeting them at the coffee line early in the morning. So I think some of that will shift and change a lot of demand that we have, you know, for the brick and mortar stores, and just overall some of the demand that we have for products being inside of stores and being shipped to stores as opposed to being shipped directly to houses. There has been also in one of the areas of our economy that's typically very defensive when it comes to economic downturns is the healthcare industry. And we've seen across the whole country, outside of the hot spots where COVID-19 is rampant, but we've seen hospital populations down significantly. And this has mm-hmm. led to, you know, a significant amount of furloughs of nurses and other medical staff in hospitals. This is slowly coming back online, but, you know, we still don't have full occupancy in the hospital systems yet, which is, I guess, a good thing as well, just in case there is a large outbreak of more viruses, cases, I should say. But at the same time, when the hospitals are running with low capacity, they typically have to lay off some people. And then you get into a point where the staff that is there is running really, really thin and running really tight and can be stretched really thin and really tight. You know, a lot of our hospitals are profitable, but they're not like many Fortune 500 companies where they have a years and years worth of cash on the balance sheet. So there's some concern in that area as to the demand aspect for other services, you know, that are elective taking place or not mm-hmm. taking place in hospitals, and how long it's going to take for those jobs to really come back to full staff. As we know, the medical industry is large, not only locally in the Orlando area, but in the state of Florida, as this is mostly a retirement state, as it's been deemed.
Yeah. I want to go back to something with regards to the hospitality industry. I noticed that there's some countries, and even here, I think I heard about a hotel in Las Vegas which is willing to pay for the flights, for travel, for people to come back to the hotel. And I've seen some other incentives. Do you think these will make a difference, or do you think people are still going to probably wait a little bit and to see where this virus goes? Because one of the things that we're seeing now is kind of a turnaround and like an uptick in some areas again with the virus. So
I think if we get through this initial phase one and phase two of opening throughout the country without seeing any large spikes in the data of new cases, then I think there will be an appetite for people to take advantage of those incentives offered. There are, I know locally here, you know, we've seen some spikes. They have not been out of control, but we've mm-hmm. seen, since we've reopened, we've seen more spikes come about of new cases. So, and that's expected to, from a certain standpoint, because there are so many people that are asymptomatic when it comes to the coronavirus. So many people that have not been tested don't know that they are a carrier of the virus, and they go out and commingle with the rest of society as we're reopening, and then it can cause a spike from there. But I truly believe that if we don't see anything rampant and the numbers continue to trend down on a national level, not just on a city by city or state by state, but if they continue to trend in the right direction on a national level, I believe more and more citizens will have that confidence to take hotels and different municipalities up on that offer.
We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. We are discussing the economy today. This is D's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Paul, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garrison. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the yard with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. It's the economy, y'all, with Paul Z. Shelton. Wanted to also talk to you about, you know, this is my wheelhouse, sort of, housing. I guess, decline in so many things. The interest rates, still good. Good decline with that. That's still good. Inventory. Not so much. In fact, some people, you know, who were going to sell have decided not to or are taking their houses off the market for one reason or another. You know, and then buyers, you know, depending on whether or not they lost their job or if they had to tap into any money that they were saving to buy a house, that might be on the decline as well. Kind of a tricky situation. What are you seeing?
I'm kind of seeing the same thing, and I'm actually hearing that from clients, you know, that I have too, and kind of hearing, you know, more so people are, you know, kind of staying put, seeing what's going to happen before they make that decision to purchase a new home. And I have heard it as well where people are looking at it and saying this is maybe the time to strike while the iron's hot, interest rates are low. It could be a perfect opportunity to get in. I think that with the interest rates being where they are, it is definitely advantageous to get in and purchase now and to be able to lock in rates at a low level like this. As we all know, when interest rates drop, it makes money cheaper and makes money and housing more affordable, so you can essentially get more for a lesser amount. So I think that's an overall positive thing. There's only two things that I saw that could be negative, and that's futuristically thinking, you know, down the line in the next 18 to 24 months. One, if we see inflation spike and if we have a unemployment situation that continues to go out of control, that could potentially hurt the housing industry, especially for new buyers that get in now. But I think overall, you know, there is, you know, a shortage out there of houses because many people have taken their houses off the market, and there is still a certain amount of demand. And I believe we're reopening the country at a good time, at an optimal time, because we're actually going to be going into the summer season, which, you know, is one of the hottest times to temperature wise and one of the hottest times really to get in and reposition yourself when a lot of people are looking for new housing for school zone purposes and for kids and things of that nature. So I believe that, you know, we could see some positive movement in the real estate market, especially after seeing this unemployment number today. You know, if this is the true nature and the truth direction that our country is moving at to regaining employment at this rate that we are, then that really eliminates a lot of the fear of potentially having a spike in foreclosures and things of that nature. So that adds a lot of more confidence back into consumers, and I think that will add a lot of confidence into those that are really looking to get into the market and buy at this time.
The thing that's interesting to me, too, I'm curious in terms of what's going to happen with our school systems now. Because one of the things I heard recently was that if they, you know, space out these classrooms and all of this type of stuff, you're going to require more teachers, and there's already kind of a deficit when it comes to the amount of teachers here anyway. So, but I'm wondering if you know, we're going to see more schools as well. I've been kind of curious about that too. So.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what's going to happen, you know, locally with the schools too. As a parent and as a business owner, having kids at school is a benefit for me, and in school is a benefit for them as well. Was one of the parents that received a survey from Orange County, asking the one question survey, I should say, asking if we would want kids to go back to school or elect for virtual school only, which if, you know, the election is to move to having virtual school in a large quantity, then we would see a significant shift of things take place.
Yeah, for sure. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the stock market because, you know, some people look at the stock market as kind of an indicator of how things are going to go. And it's been kind of, to me, it's been kind of unpredictable, you know, just when you think it's you know, kind of not going to be so favorable, then it jumps up and say, hey, we're still around. We're still here. We're still playing. So tell me a little bit about that.
So the stock market has historically been a leading indicator as to where the economic market is going. Typically, when the stock market is crashing, that lets you know that economic outlook is going to be bad in the future because investors are starting to sell and lean away from investing in the stock market for fear of a calamity ahead. The same is true in the opposite. When the market is really rising, that means investors have a lot of positive prospects about the economic activity that's going to take place in the near-term future. Therefore, they price it in into the stock market early. Since our bottom that we've seen, our lows that we've seen on the stock market back in March, the market has been, you know, steadily going up, and it's even up right now 3% on the Dow Jones and 3% on the S&P 500, all on the basis of the current information that was released on the unemployment rate. One thing that we have seen that's been totally different than any other time before, and I think it's only happened one other time, maybe back in the 1960s or 50s in our economy, is as the unemployment rate started to decrease over the last 11 weeks in this country, the stock market has went up at the same time. Now, that's a significant disconnect that you typically do not see, and it goes against all economic theory that you will find in any textbook on this globe. But it's been something that's been taking place, and a lot of the belief behind why the stock market rose so much is due to the amount of economic stimulus and the amount of money that was poured into the economy over the same time frame as unemployment rate was increasing. So we typically don't see that, and you typically don't have a stock market that rises in the face of some of the other data that we had come out on supply side and on manufacturing data, not just with the unemployment, but other, you know, things that have been out there that shows that the economy was really, really not hot at this time. Today is the first data point that was released that really shows true signs of the economic recovery. However, the stock market has been in a recovery since early April, I should say, which is different. It's caught a lot of people off guard, and it's totally different than expectations and, again, what history has shown us. Typically, we won't start to see a recovery until now when you start to see good data come back into the market. So that leads me to believe that it's very possible that the market, the stock market, may have run up too far too quickly ahead of itself, ahead of where the economic data is currently right now. It is very possible that as the summer weighs on, we could see a pullback or a softening in the stock market to meet up with the economic market, because right now they're not trading in tandem with one another. And one camp of believers out there believes that, you know, there's so much cash on the sidelines, so many people have got economic stimulus, and so many people have shifted away from investing in the stock market, that there will be a wave of new money coming back into the stock market, which will cause stocks to shift up higher. And this is very possible. And as long as we continue to see, you know, good positive data coming from, you know, all sectors of the economy, including real estate and including the unemployment market, then I believe that the stock market really will have room to go higher from here.
I want to just also ask you about a niche per se, and that is home entertainment. With everybody having a shelter in place and theaters being closed and other venues being closed and certain venues actually going online to promote concerts and whatnot, you know, kind of a pay-per-view type of thing. How have you seen that fair, that arena fair, and then also as we open the economy, what do you see happening to that?
I see, and to answer the second part first, I see as we reopen the economy, you know, there will be some appetite for people to go out and go back to the movie theaters just for that overall experience. But it may not be the norm going forward. I really believe that we have seen a structural regime change in the appetite for consumers out there. Those stay-at-home stocks, you know, which many classify in that arena, such as the Netflix and Disney now, Disney Plus, Hulu, and all those entertainment modes that you can use within your home and still be connected, you know, to all current data, current media out there, is really, really starting to trend and take off. It's really, you know, highlighted for a lot of people that I may be able to, you know, make a bag of popcorn at home and enjoy life as it is, and may come out, you know, more comfortable, you know, for us to do so. And I imagine this is going to, you know, become more of a mainstream thing, especially in the entertainment industry, and especially in the sports industry, where you'll have, you know, we saw a shift, you know, a long time ago from HBO to pay-per-view for the big boxing events and things of that nature. I'm really thinking that we may see another shift away, you know, from the theaters to more so the home environment, the same type of shift. You know, a lot of people, you know, staying away from the theater and just being able to watch a movie at home. If you get your neighbors to...
I'm not there.
No.
I mean, I mean, I understand that. Well, I'll tell you, I kind of am and I kind of not. I'm actually wanting to get, because I have a decent sized yard, I'm actually wanting to get one of those large blow up screens,
yeah,
and invite some family and friends and do the outdoor movie thing in the backyard. But also, too, I do miss going to the theater. And, in fact, one of our favorite theaters is opening up today, and they went down on the price, and I don't know if that's just to get people back in or if that's going to be a regular thing, but their price cut in half almost, to the point that we're thinking about even they have a surcharge for purchasing the tickets online, but even if you purchase the tickets online with that surcharge, it's been going, you know, to the theater box office and buying it at the old price. And part of me is like, yeah, I think I kind of want to go, and I kind of want to go ahead and get my ticket online because they've also reduced the seating. So I'm afraid, and they've reduced the number of showings. So I'm afraid that if I don't get my ticket online, then I may not get in or get a seat. So I don't know. I think you're right, but at the same time, I think some of us still just kind of like that atmosphere of going and sharing the experience with other folks.
And I agree with you, and I think it's all based on, you know, preference and the experience that someone is going to get from there. And that was going to be one of my next points, is price point. Hearing that there is a reduction in the price, whether it's temporary or is going to be permanent, that will help, you know, drive possibly some more demand for that. I know for myself, a family of five, soon to be a family of six, going to the movies is a costly event, you know. Yeah. So that's sometimes an event that we would have to refinance the house to be able to take all of us out to the movies. And then in that situation, it does become advantageous to kind of shelter at home and
right.
just buy a bag of popcorn. But, you know, if it is a date night where it's just me and my wife, that's where, you know, I enjoy it too.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We are here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shores. We're talking about the economy, y'all. It's G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. The number, if you have questions or comments, is 516-387-1944. And we will be right back.
Having a wedding, reception, family reunion, planning a banquet, or some other fundraising event. Need to share your knowledge through a workshop or seminar. Or it's a difficult time and you need to plan a wake or repast. Let us help. At our gatherings, let us reduce the stress and make the occasion memorable, treasured. Call our gatherings at 407-968-9387 or email ourgatherings@yahoo.com. Let us help plan your special event.
This is Douglas Dobbs of Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community for 29 years with quality funeral and cremation services. Honoring all religions and faiths, we have been here for many grieving families. Whether it's a complete funeral service with a burial or a simple, dignified cremation, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here for you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs. Dedicated to serving our families.
Good afternoon, wonderful Friday afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking the economy, y'all, and this is the first Friday of the month where we usually try to do that. We're here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shores, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about goodness, lost my train of thought just that quickly. The money, the stimulus money, the unemployment money. So there are some people that actually really, really need it really, really bad. And so, you know, there's no question they've got to try to take care of the day-to-day with that. But there are some people that it's giving them maybe a little bit of a cushion, a little bit of wiggle room. So do you have some advice in terms of maybe if you have kind of some spare cash, is there something specific that you should be doing with that?
Well, what I have advised thus far is to make sure you fund that rainy day fund. Make sure whatever extra that's coming in, that you create that cushion so that if we do see another spike in negative market volatility or anything that will cause any adverse reaction financially, that you would be prepared for that. So that's always the first and primary thing that I advise. And the next thing I advise, once you get your savings in order, then that's when it's time to really look at really preparing for retirement, preparing for tomorrow. So deal with today first, which is your savings, and then move on to tomorrow, which is that retirement. So there is belief that And there is some correlation in the charts that when the economic stimulus payments were released in mid-April and then have been going out thus far, and at the same time, we've seen somewhat of a rise in the stock market. So there is belief that many people were taking their stimulus money and putting it into the stock market and investing it, which is not necessarily, I don't believe that was the tactic that the federal government had in place all along, but it may have helped push the market up, and at the same time, it may have helped some individuals, you know, get into a better situation when it comes to retirement. So those are the things that I typically advise on. Always make sure that you're prepared for retirement. Retirement is a big thing. There's a lot of people out there that are, you know, trying to prepare for retirement, and the better we can do, the earlier, the better we'll be off later. So that's what I typically advise, you know, when it comes to that. And I know there are still several people out there, I think approximately 11 million people that have not received a stimulus payment yet that are eligible to receive one. And there's a large population of homeless people that are eligible to receive a stimulus payment, but the IRS just does not have contact information for them. So I've been actually encouraging people, and as much as I can through my YouTube channel, to reach out to your local community organizations, local churches, anyone that services the homeless population, and really educate them on that the CARES Act does exist and that they possibly could be eligible to receive that. That economic stimulus. You know, if they were receiving $1,200, that could really, really significantly make a change for someone that is currently homeless right now. And it says that there's still 11 million people that haven't received it. So hopefully that will change, and that number will come down to zero sooner than later.
Okay, so you mentioned, I think you mentioned somewhere in the conversation of retail, and the retail was already having an issue. Now we see there's some that are filing bankruptcy and closing. One of the more recent ones was JCPenney, which has been a staple for a very, very long time in my life. Now you see that they're I think they said they were going to close like 154 stores or whatever. Are we still going to continue to see that downward trend in brick and mortar retail? And you know, how's that? And then also too, how's the, you know, the whole thing affecting the online purchasing, especially I guess delivery. I'm thinking delivery had a major uptick.
Yeah, we saw a large increase in delivery. Amazon is really hitting it out of the park right now. And then, you know, what's going to follow behind that is specifically on the delivery side, UPS, FedEx, the United States Postal Service, as they continue to pick up the pieces behind the trucks that Amazon is sending out. So I do believe that we're going to see a significant shift in that brick and mortar in the retail stores. We just won't need as many of them out there. We see it with JCPenney just filing. It seems like this is going to be the final death blow. I know JCPenney's for the last maybe 6 or 7 years plus have been going back and forth, hanging, you know, just teetering by a thread, it seems like, for most of the time. Stock price even dropped down below a dollar, I remember, over the last 5 years significantly. That's just one of them. Then you think about, you know, the stores that were, you had Kmart, you had Sears, you had a lot of other, you know, those retailers that are out there that are becoming, you know, just a fixture in the textbook. They're becoming history now, and we're not seeing them. We're getting more deliveries to our doorsteps through Amazon or directly from the manufacturer itself, whether we're ordering, you know, electronics. And if they do bypass the manufacturer or if they do go out from the manufacturer to a retail store, over the last couple months, we have not bought them at the retail store. So many, and the data shows that many TVs that were purchased, computers and different things like that, whether it's through Office Depot, Staples, Best Buy, they were all shipped in delivery, purchased online and shipped to an office location or to a home. That's a very, very, you know, convenient factor for many people. It saves them time, saves them from having to run around the different stores. So I believe that trend is going to continue, and that's going to bode well for the shipping and trucking industry, as they'll be able to support, you know, that infrastructure for that demand. And the other thing that I noticed is, and this is something that's been out there, I hadn't used it, but many college students are getting groceries delivered to them. And you can order groceries online, and most college campuses around the country now has an Amazon store on campus. I know UCF has one on campus where you can pick up and drop off. And it's actually a very beautiful system where you can go in there and there's lockers in there. You're given a code. You can use your cell phone, scan your code. It'll take you to whichever particular locker where your groceries were placed, and then you can pull everything out, and it's easy, set, and good to go. So there's just a huge shift in technology and in the way that we do things that is it can be a little scary when you think about it for the mom-and-pop grocery stores that are out there that are, you know, may fall off to the wayside.
I'm still old-fashioned, I guess, or old school, or whatever you want to call it. But my thing is, I don't want some, like, especially groceries. I don't necessarily want more people than necessary touching my food. Okay, I want to be able to pick, you know, whatever size or quantity of stuff that I want, and have the right at that moment to change my mind if, you know, I decide, you know, we're having guests for dinner or whatever, or this is going to be too much, and change it. And so that's part of my issue is I'm I guess I'm more tactile in terms of selecting stuff, whether it's food, whether it's clothing or whatever. And then my other issue is, how much are you going to charge me for delivery? Because for what you charge me for delivery, I can get in my car, run and get it and come back home and be sure to have exactly what I want without extra charges and without having to worry about returning the item. So that's another area where I'm just not quite there, but, you know, just call me weird.
Yeah, and I completely understand that, because, you know, I'm the same way with produce. I want to be able to see it and touch it and understand the freshness of it before, you know, I take it home. And it may just be a change with this next generation that's coming up, that I'm doing things differently. When I did do a little small mental survey and asked a few people that were in college recently, you know, the feedback that I received was that mom and dad would rather order X amount of things or goods that I know that I'm going to eat, as opposed to giving me, you know, cash to go buy groceries with. Because if I use cash to buy groceries, I'm going to buy $100 worth of beer, as opposed to getting things that I would truly need. So there may be a safety aspect in there with mom and dad saying, hey, we're going to order these for you because we know we're going to get you ramen noodles and chicken and things that you're going to need, as opposed to you buying $100 worth of snacks and beer.
Yeah.
So.
But, yeah, and I kind of – it harkened me back to my college and early adult days where, you know, if I was in a bind or something, my parents would bring over bags of groceries to stock up my refrigerator rather than give me money.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that I was going to go out and – blow the money on junk. It was that, you know, if there was a bill that I was behind on, I was going to go ahead and pay that bill and then just kind of starve, I guess, or whatever. And at that point, I think I was barely over 95 pounds. So I think they were more concerned that I ate.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, I want to ask about the impact of the protests on the economy and on you. So we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back. We're here with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shore. This is G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. If you have a question or a comment, the number is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back.
This is Douglas Dobbs, owner and funeral director at Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service. We have served the Central Florida community with two generations of family funeral service. With the recent addition of my son Brandon, we are here to take care of the needs of Central and West Orlando. From simple cremation to a full burial, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service is here to help you. Located at 430 North Kirkman Road at the 408 Expressway, Dobbs Cremation and Funeral Service, 407-578-7720. Dobbs, dedicated to serving our families.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Dip Simmons with Farrell Realty, but you know me as G from G's Power Hour. Much of the time when I'm not engaging with you on my show, I'm dealing in real estate in beautiful Central Florida. But because I'm here, that doesn't mean I can't help you wherever you are. So if you're looking to buy, invest, relocate, rent, or sell, please give me a call at 407-968-9387. That's 407-968-9387, and let me help you with your real estate needs.
Good afternoon, Friday afternoon, yes. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We are talking the economy with Paul Z. Shelton of Warwick Shores. And Paul, so like I said, it's been a turbulent week. You know, we're still kind of dealing with whether or not to open or close or go out or stay in with the virus. But now we are dealing with protests, unfortunate protests, but necessary protests because of the death, the murder of George Floyd, in addition to several other incidents that have happened within the past several weeks. So can you talk a little bit about the impact that has made or is making? We know obviously that there are businesses that are suffering as a result of, you know, the protests. The ones that got unruly ended up causing, you know, some breakage and some theft. And in some cases, like I know, for example, here locally in Orange County, early closing, if it wasn't closing early already, of the Walmarts. Walmart, the closing at 5 p.m., which is insane to me because if you're just getting off of, if you have a regular job, if you're just getting off of work, you know, you can't go to Walmart. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it's been a very, very frustrating time and season that we are in right now in history. It's very, very unfortunate that, you know, the racial injustice that we have seen play out with the murder of George Floyd continue through where we are now in 2020. I mean, we're not in 1960. We're not in 1920. We're not, you know, in the 1500s or anything like that. But it's very sad to see where we are. Hopefully we can see something come from all of this that we're in right now. On an economic standpoint, it has hurt some of the larger retailers out there that have had to shutter and close stores early, but their balance sheets are sufficient enough to carry through issues of this nature. And if there were any sizable hiccups from any disruption from any protest or anything of that nature, most companies have insurance to cover that. Where we see the most significant damage is in the mom-and-pop stores, you know, the backbone of America, those small businesses that are in the pathway of some of the destruction that came about with the protests and some of the negative parts of the protest, I should say. Many of those companies, whether they're, you know, jewelry stores or all types of stores that are out there, in grocery stores and things of that nature, that is the only lifeblood that they have. And when a store is shut down or vandalized and product is stolen and product is lost on their end, they'll have to go through a process of filing an insurance claim for that to be able to recoup, you know, some of those losses, in which most cases is not going to be, you know, 100% of those losses. And then it puts them in a financial bind of making a decision as to whether to reopen the store or to shift around and do something different altogether. These a lot of times maybe barbershops or places, coffee shops, cafes, places that may have been around for, you know, two generations. And they're coming to a point now where they're having to make a tough, difficult decision as to whether it's safe to reopen. And once they get construction done, once they rebuild from any places that were vandalized, and once they're able to restock on any of the product that they lost, how do they move forward from there? And what will the cost be from an insurance standpoint? Because rates will increase as a result of this, and it very possible could be reclassified or rezoned from an insurance standpoint as a hostile area, therefore causing a significant amount of changes to take place with applying for financing and applying for, you know, other things, security for your building, and so many different things. So it has significantly adversely affected small businesses. The large businesses, you know, Walmart, Target, we understand that, you know, there were some Target stores, super centers that were vandalized and damaged pretty badly, but they will be able to recover. You know, they have the breadth of sales to be able to make up for any of that missing revenue in that one area. I think what it does more so is it opens up the eyes of corporate America that has been asleep on the fact of racism and social injustice in this country forever. So hopefully we'll see some righting of some of the wrongs that are done, and hopefully a righting of all the wrongs that are done, at least an effort to do so. One of the things that we saw that we have seen this week just on CNBC and MSNBC, CNN, several of the media outlets, is several CEOs have taken, taken to Twitter and social media to advise on what they're doing within their organization to give back and to provide financial resources for the African American community, for minorities and things of that nature. And I applaud that, but I believe that it has to go a step further than just providing some financial assistance or just developing a committee that's going to deal with, you know, racism on a corporate level. I think it has to go much deeper than that, because racism is something that is easily hidden when it wants to be. And it's something that is silent but always present in corporate America. And this is something that I experienced personally in I would say in every employer that I've had up to this date. I've experienced some form of racism or racial injustice directed towards me directly. And if those corporations spend time on CNBC and those CEOs spend time talking to their investors and shareholders about what they're planning to do, but never turn around and look at the choir and preach to the choir, their employees and their managers and their junior level managers about how they're interacting and treating their employees, then this is going to persist forever. And so I'm a big proponent of, you know, CEOs and corporations looking internally and dealing with racism in-house, as well mm-hmm. as dealing with it externally.
You know, something that you mentioned, I really think there needs to be a coming together of a variety of people to get a clear definition of what racism is, and not just for white people, but for all people. And the reason I say that, because something that you just brought up made me think a little bit, and that was the insurance issue, where, you know, you think maybe the insurance is higher or non-existent in certain communities because they're minority communities. However, it may just be an economics thing where if you're tearing down your community, like if you're, you know, targeting small businesses and burning them down or stealing from them, and they become high risk in terms of insurance, it's not because it's a black community. It's because it's a high risk community because of what has happened there, because of the history and the possibility of what happens there. So that's where I think we need to have a come to Jesus meeting in terms of what racism actually is, and then what other things are that might look like racism. But there's, I mean, yes, definitely there's a lot of racism, especially institutional racism, from how much you pay for your gas, you know, in terms and to where the gas stations may be located, where the major grocery stores are located. That's one of the things I have an issue with, where certain neighborhoods you see a Publix every other block, and in certain other neighborhoods you're hard-pressed to find one. You have to drive outside of your neighborhood to go and find one, you know. And it's not just them, you know, but that's something. Talk a little bit more, Paul. What do you see? How you know, I guess I'm going to sound like the psychologist or whatever, but how does this make you feel in terms of the murder of George Floyd, and what are you telling your children?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So that really it really caused some of the same irritation and frustrations that many people are out protesting and everyone else that has in this country right now and across the globe. It's a very, very tough time that we're in, especially for me as a business owner and for someone that has a family with small kids, you know, 9 years old and under, and how to explain this to them, how to explain, you know, what social injustice is, and really, you know, taking that conversation and really, really disseminating it to them in a manner that is palatable for them to digest, but not scare them at the same time. One of the things that was very frustrating that took place and shows you how prevalent racism is, you know, a few months ago, my daughter, you know, returned home from a sleepover, and she was told that slavery didn't happen, and it was really black people beating white people, and that's what, you know, slavery was all about. And for a five-year-old girl to come home and tell this to her parents in today's society is very, very troubling. And so this was something that caused a lot of frustration and really opened, you know, the eyes of me and my wife on what we have to do to really educate, you know, our kids about history and to educate them about what's going on in the world today. As a business owner and as a professional in today's society, I've been met with racism on various levels, you know, being denied opportunities for jobs and only because of the color of my skin, and have this being told to me by, you know, previous managers, you know, that this was the reason. It's just very, very heartbreaking. But I really hope that we are at a point in the tenor of this country where we are able to move forward collectively and in agreement, holding hands, white, black, brown, indifferent, you know, the same. And we're all able to move forward and make a substantive change in our society. And that's what my true hopes and desires are.
Paul V. Shelton, thank you so much for your comments, your insight, and your time today. Really appreciate it. And I actually, and I'll tell you why later, but I actually want to have you back next Thursday if possible, but I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay, sounds good.
I appreciate it. And thank you all
for
joining us.
No problem, thank you.
Thank you. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Before I go, I want to ask you, if you plan on protesting, be safe. Please, you know, just make sure you get the point across without distracting from the point. And when they say the curfew is up, fine, go home, make your game plan out in terms of what you're going to do the next day for getting the point across. But I just want you to be well, be safe. There's still the virus out there, so protect yourselves from that as well. Have a very blessed weekend, and please remember, All real power comes from God. Take care.
Your mouth. Come on. You gotta say something.